Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. Another Monday morning pod. What's up, brother?
Oh, I'll tell you, the news is driving us to Monday. Every Monday. There's just so much to talk about. It's not possible to wait.
No, the people demand it.
They do demand
it. You and
it.
I demand it of ourselves. We demand greatness.
Well,
from everyone in our lives.
I push you very hard.
What are you wearing today?
I'm wearing a polo.
Do you look like Steve Jobs or like Mike Myers from the old SNL Sprocket skit? Like, what decision was made this morning?
Trying to sartorially dominate you with a polo neck, which makes me seem smarter than I actually am.
Oh, the mere thought of you putting something on and thinking that you have an even higher opinion of yourself than normal is actually frightening.
Next week is going to be polo neck and pipe. I'm going to smoke a pipe.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very...
It's daring.
I'll be honest. I don't think more of you. I don't know what... it's just not... I don't know. I couldn't pull off the black turtleneck.
I'm not sure I'm pulling it off, but that's what was worn this morning, and that's what's happening.
I don't care for it. I don't want to see it again. What a show we're going to have for you. We're going to talk with Mark Ogden coming up shortly. He's been all over the place lately because he's been one of the, I don't want to say one of the lone voices to be all for what Tottenham just did in firing Pochettino and hiring Mourinho. But he's been one of the more prominent ones, certainly at this company with ESPN FC. I've seen him on various interviews, and he's been put through the ringer from people that are, like, even angrier about it, seemingly, than Tottenham fans are.
I am glad he's coming on, because our last podcast was pretty reactionary and pretty anti-Mourinho.
And we're going to talk about that.
And we got followed by an account with an avatar of Mourinho and with the name Respect Mourinho.
You know what? He does command that, and we will talk about that because the dust has settled. But I look forward to having a nice, like, rational conversation with Mark. I saw him on with Robbie Savage. Robbie Savage is yelling over every word he's trying to say. We'll let him talk.
I want Robbie Savage on this podcast at some point, but equally I don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just want him to come on and sing.
Ain't nobody.
Coming to Pride Park. Let's see. Other things happened in the weekend that we have to talk about. Man City and Chelsea, Liverpool finding a way yet again to go on and win. Other managers now on the hot seat. It seems like almost at an accelerated rate after Tottenham kind of pushed the first domino over. So there's a lot to get to. Even the Copa Libertadores final, that will be mentioned later on in the podcast. So there's a lot. There's a lot here.
But there's a mailbag too as well.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm already worried about the length. You know what though? I've kind of thrown that out the window. You listen as long as you want to listen, and we're just happy to have you. Let's start now, JJ, with Tottenham and West Ham from the London Stadium. It is Jose Mourinho and Spurs who go on and win this one 3-2. They were up 3-0 at one point, and you hinted at it, but even before the game actually happened, because I don't want to sit here and just make it sound like because they won one game, it's caused me to change everything that I feel about Mourinho and Pochettino.
Yeah,
and
we'll get
that.
To that.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I do want to say that the last podcast we did, look, there was a very reactionary nature to it. That's kind of the fun of those podcasts.
Sure.
Big news happens and you and I immediately go to the studio and we just kind of like
hash it out.
We're kind of formulating thoughts right there on the spot after things like that happen. So I think it's probably more sensible to talk about those things like now, with a few days time after the dust is settled. Look, there are certain elements of the decision that I'm always going to feel a certain way about. And I think that Pochettino, because of the way in which he lifted Tottenham from one echelon of the football hierarchy in England to another, and make no mistake, I do believe that he did that, and got them in games routinely in domestic cup semifinals and, of course, a Champions League semifinal. There is an emotional bond between him and a fan base that is hard to... It's just hard to explain. I'm sure maybe Arsenal fans felt it when they went with Wenger and, Chelsea fans the first time around with Mourinho, although things have happened since that maybe caused them to feel differently. But when a manager comes and lifts a club from one area of the game to another, there's just an emotional attachment there. So I can't help but always feel like I'm going to believe that they did Pochettino a little bit wrong and they got rid of him a little too quickly. However, I am glad that even in the reactionary podcast, when things are being emotional and you're just saying whatever, I did at least have the wherewithal to say that you know, like, I can't sit here, if you're somebody like Mark Ogden, who we'll talk to coming up, you know, I can't sit here and say that someone coming at it from that perspective is crazy for thinking that Tottenham did the right thing. Like, you can't look at some of these results over the last year and be shocked that Tottenham would find it within themselves to feel the need to make a move.
I think he'd come to the end of a cycle, but more than that, he didn't get to change what he wanted to change, and he was stuck with players who were just kind of not listening to the message anymore. We said that the last few weeks. We said this is probably the end. The results in 2019 would probably doom him to be sacked, or he would move on himself. Didn't expect Mourinho coming in. That was the shock. See that. Did not think that it met Tottenham's style of play, the kind of ethics of the club, if you want.
Right.
But he's here.
Yeah, he certainly is.
And you got on board.
No stopping it now.
You say you didn't get on board, but
Saturday
morning. Let's talk about Saturday morning. So right. I'm tweeting the incidents and the goals out from the game as they happen in the early game, as I sometimes do on the show account. And I'm not saying anything inflammatory. It's just regular tweets. And then this tweet comes out of nowhere. I didn't send it. Haven't seen a Tottenham goal as good as that second in a long time. Dele Alli looks like a different player, in a good way. Eric Dier will benefit from Mourinho, but in the meantime, he's a problem. So weird seeing Jose managing Spurs, but I'm getting used to it. Brackets and fast. And I'm like, this is 8:26 in the morning.
Right.
The game isn't even over. Mourinho's first game isn't over. And Andrew just seems completely enlivened, lifted from the place he was on the podcast last week.
First of all, you are grossly exaggerating, and because you chose to read it. Oh, here comes Mourinho. I'm so happy. That second goal. Why do you have to read it in that tone?
Well, this is this is the tone that I read it in.
I don't want to tempt fate, but I think everything's going to be totally great forever.
I have never said that. I have always believed that this will, at some point, there will be peaks with the Tottenham Mourinho relationship, but there is going to be a crash and burn at the end of this. And we all know it's coming. It's just how it works when you choose to get into bed with this guy. So, you know, like, I understand the situation, but I do resent a couple. First of all, the voice that you read that in was wholly inappropriate.
Yeah, because you're much more downbeat than that.
But I don't know. I think a lot of that, look, it, how can, it's Jose Mourinho. Like, I'm watching after we did that press, the podcast, I'm watching his press conference, and like, I don't know, Mourinho, he's, for better or worse, he is one of the larger than life figures in this game. And Tottenham, for however good they are at certain points in their history, they're not really a larger than life club, which is kind of one of the things that I do like about them. There's like a little more of like an understated nature to them than some of your Chelsea's, Man City's, whoever. But like, seeing him on the podium with the cockerel on his shirt and like the backdrop of the stadium, like there's, like, there is part of your brain that's like, this is crazy.
It is
in a
crazy
good way. Like, this is exciting. Like, Jose Mourinho, this guy who has achieved success everywhere he's gone, has chosen us,
Andrew,
as the team he wants to manage. Like, there is some part of you that, as a Tottenham fan, that can't help but be like, wow, we've like, and Pochettino helped deliver them to this point, but it was sort of like a we've arrived kind of moment. Like, he's big time, man.
Come on, let's talk about the type of excitement it is. It is an excitement, but there are varying degrees of excitement. This is not excitement. This is going to work. This is going to be amazing. This is excitement. How will this end? What fresh hell will he take us to after maybe a brief period of winning? That's the excitement.
Yeah, let's just gloss over that. Like, it's an easy thing for a Liverpool fan who's achieved so much success and is about to achieve a league title. But like,
one European cup.
But for you to just one trophy
since 2012.
For you to just simply gloss over, you know, that statement of, yeah, we'll achieve a little bit of success, but then the crash and burn at the, like, that's not fair, because Tottenham don't, like, that's not innate to our club.
Okay, so you will happily take an FA Cup or a League Cup or something of that nature. Well, what else is there really? If you don't win the league. Or maybe, I suppose winning the league would justify the chaos and the toxicity he will bring.
100%.
Right. But what happens if it plays out like what happened at United?
You're right.
Where it's an FA Cup or a League Cup.
And a Europa League.
Yeah, I mean,
you're right.
Was that worth all the damage?
Here's what I would tell you. First of all, there's been this debate about a League Cup, which there's a belief Mourinho, he can deliver things like that. You know, that's something Tottenham fans should set their expectations as at a League Cup as a bare minimum. So will you take that versus what Pochettino delivered? Didn't win anything, got you to a Champions League semi, Champions League final. I will tell you right now, I would not trade. I know Tottenham lost in really disappointing fashion to Liverpool. I wouldn't trade that experience for almost anything.
Right. I totally agree.
League Cup, FA Cup, I'm not trading either of those things.
For a run in Europe.
The moments along the way to lose that Champions League final Liverpool.
That is something I can completely agree with.
Now, having said that, like, you know, you can always kind of downplay the significance of winning a League Cup or an FA Cup when you're not winning them.
Right.
It's another thing to, like, when Tottenham beat Chelsea to win their Ben Carling Cup back in the late 2008, like, that was a huge deal to me.
Well, Robbie Keane celebrated like it was the European Cup.
I mean, that was a huge deal to myself, to Tottenham supporters. So, you know, like, I can, like, take a dump on the idea of winning that all I want. But then when you're actually the one doing it and you're the one having that day and hoisting that trophy, it's going to feel a little bit different. So, like, I'm not going to just simply denigrate that and downplay it. But I don't know. It's one of those things that I feel like you don't really know how it's going to feel until you've done it. But yeah, as for this game specifically, there were just a couple things I wanted to mention.
Sure.
The things that Mourinho could do with this club. First of all, the reason I said that about the second goal that you made fun of, like, the reason I felt that way about it is because what was all the talk?
It was a great goal.
Right. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Right. All the talk leading up to this game, to Mourinho's first game, and after his appointment was, like what you said earlier in this podcast, well, like, this clash of styles. I mean, Tottenham are used to playing a certain way, and that's not the Mourinho way. And Pochettino played that way, but that's not how Mourinho's going to play. Well, like, they scored that second goal, and it's kind of a reminder to you, like, oh, wait a minute. Like, yeah, Jose does want to defend, but they're still going to play, like, pretty football. Like,
they had probably two field training sessions before that game. That's a goal born out of Pochettino.
And they can't continue to do that. Like, the only goals he that they're going to score now are, like, set pieces, scrambles in front of the net, and it gets poked in.
No. If anything, Mourinho has said, look, for this season, we're going to build, or we're going to continue the work that Maurizio did. I mean, it's going to be very hard to take them out of that shape and put them into another one that's as successful. What you might see is them playing on the break a little bit more, which they can do equally effectively.
That's become one of their strengths.
Yeah, it was brilliant to see Dele Alli, I don't like the term, but I'm in America, so the hustle. He's on his ass, and he still keeps the ball in play. That was a brilliant. And the flick, the amount of purchase he got on the flick.
It's perfect, yeah.
To keep that move going. Son was devastating all game long. Mm-hmm. It was, again, I don't want to be pouring, you know, cold water on this whole thing, but West Ham are, you know, a perfect opponent to have in these scenarios. And if you look at the way,
Tottenham have struggled against them.
I know, but this West Ham team is in serious freefall now. Fredericks and Diop were disastrous. If Noble and
Declan Rice
and Rice weren't,
and really the Mikel Antonio coming on in the second half.
Oh, yeah. He looked like he wanted it. But, I mean, the rest of that midfield, Anderson, Yarmolenko, just disastrous. And nobody could get the ball to Haller in the first half.
Yeah. West Ham are winless in their last 8 in all competitions. They've lost 6 of those. They're now 16th in the table following this latest defeat. It feels like their manager is now his own hot seat. Really hot.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take... I actually think he's done. He's gone. It's just a matter of time. It's the next bad result. I can't see him surviving. He would have to turn it around in a way. First of all, I don't think it's entirely his fault. But again, a lot of these were his purchases, and they have not worked out.
No. They're in a bit of dire straits right now. And when you start talking about being 16th in the table, like, that's dire to a level of, if we don't fix this, this could actually become a true disaster. So yeah, to me, that would be, we'll talk about Everton shortly, but I guess it's down to West Ham and Everton to me as to who makes the next move.
Look at key positions that West Ham have problems in. Goalkeeper. I mean, Roberto is one of the worst goalkeepers I've ever seen play at that level.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Center back, center forward is a problem because they don't really have a lot of backup, but more than that, they can't get the ball to him.
The thing about Roberto is, like, first, he's reached this level.
So right, so he's clearly good.
But he's doing things that you would think even the most novice goalkeeper or certainly goalkeeper coach could correct. Like, he's coming for balls and just flailing at them.
He's got the yips. Now, he punched one into his own net at Burnley, which I cruelly put the American Beauty music to in slow motion. Like, the ball's just floating there. And that was unfair of me. But he just looks like he cannot handle it, even a basic cross. You see the one that was coming for his chest? And he just did this weird punch. He contorted his body so he didn't have to catch it.
Yeah.
Bad.
There's something going on there, and they need to fix that quickly, because he is costing them games.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is a worry. We'll move on. We'll talk with Mark Ogden, like I said, coming up a little bit more on the Jose Mourinho stuff. And I'm sure it's Mourinho. Like, that stuff just... it'll find its way into future podcasts, I'm sure. But we want to talk about what was probably the biggest game of the weekend, certainly in terms of table implications.
Yeah.
Manchester City and Chelsea, and it's Man City that get by 2-1.
Good first half in terms of the game itself for the neutral, entertaining. Second half, City just kind of took over and suffocated Chelsea.
Yeah. The second half and the first half, you're right. There was a clear delineation in between which one was the more enjoyable to watch. And I'll tell you what, man, I'm not saying Manchester City weren't deserving winners because of what they did do in that second half, but boy, like, if you were Chelsea and Frank Lampard when that score turned to 1-1, you must have thought, oh my God. Like, you talk about goals against the run of play. Chelsea were playing well.
I know, but
they couldn't find that second one, but you thought, okay, well, they're clearly in control of this game. Something is up with Manchester City. And then De Bruyne, like, scoring a goal on a deflection through a player's legs. It was just like, oh, that just felt cruel.
There's a lot of credit to be given to Chelsea. And I suppose we have to think of Chelsea not as dominant Chelsea, but as new, young, emerging Chelsea. For them to go away to Manchester City and play so openly, you know you're going to get beaten. You just know it. But there's also the chance that you can win. And really, Frank Lampard only plays one way. It's to his credit. There and then, look at some of the moves they put together in the first half. The way they linked the play, it was exciting to watch. Mm-hmm. But Andrew, if you're going to be expansive and try and take on Pep Guardiola, not at his own game, but you're going to play with a freedom, you're going to leave yourself open, and ultimately that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're Chelsea, it's not just that you can play open. Like, I think that's something that if Frank Lampard believes he has a talented team that can play that style, I kind of respect his decision to say, I'm playing that way no matter who my opponent is. The problem is you have to finish your chances. Like, true. Tomori getting in, you know, one kind of in front of the net, and it may not be quite as easy as I'm making it out to be, but like, it was a snapshot that he just put barely wide of the post.
I expected to see the net bulging there.
Right.
And like, when it went past the post, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And Tomori's reaction, I mean, he slammed his fist on the ground. Like, he knew, like, we're playing at Manchester City. These are the moments where we have to finish our chances.
Because conversely, you know they're going to create chances.
Right. You're not
going to
shut them out.
No.
But just to see, like, the immediacy of Chelsea playing well, De Bruyne a deflection goal, now it's just like that, it's 1-1.
Well,
it just felt very
harsh. Was cruel, and it was, you know, markedly against the run of play. But the second half, Guardiola said in his press conference, oh, we tweaked things, we changed things around a bit, and they definitely did. They got more of the ball, more control, and you saw less of what Chelsea were doing in the first half.
A couple things here. First, I wanted to mention Sergio Aguero leaving with an injury. Pep, I haven't heard much about it, but Pep said it would be a miracle for Aguero to be ready for the Manchester derby.
Which is, I mean, the injuries that they've had to deal with this season and the areas in which they found themselves to be lacking is really interesting, considering they're the most expensively put together squad we've ever seen in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, now, there's a lot of gaps in a lot of positions in the fullback areas, in center midfield, center back, and now center forward, where you're curious. Now they've got Gabriel Jesus to come in. But Mourinho, Guardiola has never seemed fully convinced by him, even when he's scoring goals. Aguero has played himself back into the favor of Guardiola over the last 18, well, longer than that.
But to me, that doesn't mean that's because, like, I view that more not as an indictment on Gabriel Jesus, but just Sergio Aguero is one of the best strikers in the league and has been for years.
But I do think...
I think they can now play Gabriel Jesus and you don't expect that much of a drop-off.
But you remember with the early... there was early Guardiola at City and there was talk about, well, what's going to happen to Sergio Aguero? He's not going to do the things that Guardiola wanted, but we kind of got over that phase.
Yeah, because he's great.
Right. And Gabriel Jesus has not made that impact yet, and I think this is a significant blow for City.
Well, I guess we'll find out. I don't know if I see it quite as dark as you do.
But it's one thing on top of another, Andrew.
Yeah, for me, it's more about their defense. I think that was always going to be the biggest weakness if the injury bug hit, and it hit there, and I think we still continue to see signs of that. One other thing about this I wanted to mention, I saw a quote from Pep that I thought was interesting, because he's a guy who's so, I don't know, I just look at him and I'm like, that guy is obsessed with winning. Like, just the way he is, and just, I don't know, don't you, like, feel that way? He said this, though, afterwards. He said, I think it's not a good message for society, for our kids, for our teenagers, showing them that just the winner is perfect. We are creating a depressed people, a loser people. It is not. Important is the effort, the commitment, the situation. In football, I know we want to win, but just win once and the other is a disaster? It's not. It doesn't work in that way. That's why I said to the players, relax, do your job. We will see in December, January, February, March, and we will see what position we're in. If the position is far away, okay, it's far away. We're going to try again next season. Do you buy this, or do you think this is just managerial tactics on trying to relax his team in some way?
Well, do I buy or agree with him on the general concept? Well, yes, I do. It's one that was echoed by Arsene Wenger a few years ago, that only one team can win the league every year, and to look at those who don't as failures is probably a very reductionist way to view football and society. Mm-hmm. Do I believe that
he feels that way?
Right now, no, I do not.
Okay.
I believe he is seething slightly, disappointed at the moment, and he will re-up his efforts to try and make sure that they are back where they belong,
yeah.
i.e. closer to Liverpool.
I've never looked at Pep as a participation trophy kind of guy.
No, I don't believe so either. I do, but by the way, the concept is correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I don't think it applies. Like, the concept, I don't want to sound like a loser saying this. I think the concept is correct for clubs like Tottenham. Even, like, we'll see what happens with Leicester City this year. I'm sorry, that concept is not correct for Manchester City.
No, because they've been dominant the last two seasons and built to dominate.
Yeah.
They're not built to be Sheffield United.
Now, look, it's
not built to be Leicester.
And it's not to say, now, this club has achieved a lot, so I don't know if this example works, but, like, if they lose, it doesn't mean that Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne are losers. Like, obviously, these guys are champions and they're two of the best players in the world. I'm just saying that it's fair for us as fans, media, to expect Manchester City in its current form to win almost everything that they take part of.
Because it's a project that was built to win everything. So that's why we look at it maybe a little bit differently from other teams.
Yeah, a couple other ones quickly here. Manchester United and Sheffield United. I don't know, JJ. As the season progresses, I sometimes have the Devonlings floating in the back of my mind, and I'm thinking about, okay, what's going to be my goal of the season? What's my match of the season? This, for me, could be an early contender for match of the season.
By the way, it was perfect. I think if you're selling the Premier League and you look at the weekend's games, you're not selling City and Chelsea.
Right.
You're selling this game. Wet, windy, Sheffield United, Bramall Lane, full. A big team comes in, but a team, you know, it's that Yorkshire, Lancashire rivalry there with all the teams. And a team that would have towered over the like of Sheffield United, and Sheffield United go at them and produce a thriller. That is just the Premier League.
Yeah.
That is what it should be. That is what English football is.
Right, but like all the way through, I keep following that script. It's like the little guy gets off to this great start, and somehow, oh my goodness, they're up 2-0, and then the big guy's like, okay, everyone just settle down. We're still Manchester United. 7 minutes, 3 goals, it's 3-2.
Magic.
But then right at the end, like, you think that the script is written and the little guy will take the loss, but no, they Sheffield United, as has been the case this season, they find a way at the end. They do get 1 point out of it in what was a truly memorable day at that place.
And it was a tale of substitutions. I mean, the substitution that Solskjaer made in bringing in Mason Greenwood was kind of unleashed that front line, which for 70 minutes had done nothing. Like, it was unbelievable. John Egan was missing for Sheffield United, so you have in 37-year-old Phil Jagielka, and you have Anthony Martial, Rashford, and Daniel James. And you're expecting them to go at him, you're expecting them to get turned.
Yeah.
Never happened. And then, it's just like something clicked, and you saw United play that way, and you're like, there's something still in this team, but this manager is not getting it out on a regular basis, which is the worry. And then right at the end, McBurnie, substitution by Chris Wilder, their record signing, I believe, comes on and gets one. And it was almost jotted off for a VAR handball, which would have been
tragic.
Well, it would have been the second time it happened to them in the space of 2 weeks.
Yeah. You just see things from Manchester United, like, you know, Phil Jones, in terms of body structure, he's a big guy.
Body structure.
He just is. He's built right. He's like a husky jeans wearing kind of dude, and like
knocked over by the Frenchman, the waifish Frenchman, Moussa, who I'm sure is very strong himself.
It was just funny because immediately that happened and I was like, Mark Goldbridge is not going to enjoy this. And I went on and his call of that goal is just, it's so great because he calls it and he's furious with Phil Jones. But then part of him is like that, like he's trying to then the Manchester United fan in him takes over and he's trying to say, well, maybe it's a foul and he's hoping it's a foul. And then he watches it again. He said, absolutely not a foul. Phil Jones, pathetic. It's just great. It's classic, like Goldbridge. He's all over the place, but Phil Jones, like,
I know. I mean, Andrew, he's, what, five? He has a 5 yard start on Moussa. He's on the ball and he's just brushed off like he's nothing.
There's a great still shot of the goal that somebody took and put like this freeze frame on Twitter. And it shows Phil Jones, like you say, pretty much on the ball. Moussa about a few yards behind him. And then they're kind of on the near side of the field. And then sort of like running towards the box are two other Manchester United defenders. And in this wide frame shot, that's all you see. You do not see a single other Sheffield United player. Just Moussa chasing Phil Jones, who's on possession. And at the like the caption of the photo is Sheffield United scored from this move. And it's like there aren't even any Sheffield United players within viewing distance of the play. And Phil Jones has possession. Like, I mean, it was just.
Do you know what's jarring about that game? Every time. Like, if you looked away for it for a second and you look back, it was so weird to see a team dominating United in that fashion. We've still got this view about who United are. And Sheffield United are outpassing them, outplaying them, moving the ball. There's a period in the first half where De Gea made a double save, one from, I think it was McGoldrick and then from Lundstrom. And you're like, United could lose this 2-3-0. They're all over them. It was credit to United that they got a point out of this game, which is an indictment in and of itself.
Certainly is. Liverpool, JJ, yet again, they find a way to another 3 points.
Right.
It's become a hallmark now, scoring in the 85th or later. You must love this because for so long, this was like classic Sir Alex Ferguson, and Liverpool have kind of like annexed it from Manchester United, and now sort of for a generation, there's going to be a generation of fans that think that this is a Jurgen Klopp Liverpool thing.
Yes, I don't know if Klopp time, Kloppo time, or whatever.
Kloppage time is
Kloppage
what I'm saying.
Time. Yeah. Oh, I like that one, actually. That works. Maybe that's beginning to become a thing. But there's a qualitative difference. Like, so there's dominating Leicester, but yet having to do it late to win. There's dominating Aston Villa and having to do it very late to win. This was a bad performance. We were dealing with injuries. Robertson wasn't fully fit. Salah wasn't playing. We just weren't at it. Mm-hmm. And we got lucky because the goal was a complete scramble. I don't think Bobby Firmino's ever scored a goal quite like that one. Look, not very good. Got away with one. You're going to have that in a season. If it's down to performances, you can't put this game in that lineage of other games because at least we played well in those other games. We did not play well.
You sort of answered the question I wanted to ask you, which was if you had to define one of these two words to this Liverpool team, I'm curious which one is more applicable, dominant or opportunistic?
Dominant in the way that they play. Whether they leave it late or not, they deserve to win most of those games. The weekend was a bit seat of the pants stuff.
It's going to happen, though, like you said. I mean, Manchester City along the way, how many 2-1s that they scored in the 88th minute or, you know.
Pep's second season. Right. There was a period right before Christmas where they won late at Huddersfield.
Southampton.
Palace. And it was Raheem Sterling most of the time.
Right.
So, yeah, that will happen.
Yeah.
You will not dominate every game. It just won't happen.
And then, last but not least, I wanted to just mention here the sack race. Because it's on. I mean, Tottenham, I think, were that first domino to fall. And, you know, I wonder if Arsenal saw what Spurs did and thought, like, uh-oh. Like, Mourinho was, in terms of high-profile managers out there, I don't know if I'm comfortable saying he was the best manager available. He very well might be. He's certainly the most accomplished. But definitely the most high-profile manager available. And I wonder if Arsenal thought, like, that he would just kind of be there. That if they, whenever they were ready to make a move, that he might still be floating out there. And Tottenham just, like, kind of shockingly beat them to that punch. And I wonder now what happens to these, like, Unai Emery, Marco Silva.
Yeah.
We mentioned Pellegrino.
I'm not sure that Arsenal are operating at that level, that the Cronkies are thinking in those terms. I really don't. I think they're going to try and see it out as far as possible with Emery. I know the chairman was very upset at the weekend, and there was a report that he was threatening to resign.
I also saw a report that players within the Arsenal dressing room have lost faith in this manager.
I mean,
which when that happens, that's it. It's over.
If you look at the body language and the way they're playing, it wouldn't shock you.
By the way, I mean, in talking about that game, like, how did Southampton not score 6 goals in that game? I mean, you talk about...
You asked that question, but what do we always say? At the start of every season, for the last few seasons, me and you have gone, goals are going to be a problem again. I just don't see goals in this team.
I know, but it's not because I didn't think they have guys that can't finish easy chances. I didn't think they had guys that could get to easy chances.
Right.
But they had so many of them, but they can't finish any of them.
Don't forget that we're playing a teenager. Michael Obafemi started in that game as well, the Irish international, who is but a boy. You know, so up front, Danny Ings leading the line. I know he got his goal, but...
Yeah, but they got Nathan Redmond. I mean, he's not a bad player. I
just don't think those guys are going to be clinical enough in front of goal. And you're right, they should have won that game at a canter.
And Lacazette, when he scored the equalizer, there was not a celebration. I mean, I think Arsenal know this is not good enough.
You saw him at full time. He was...
Yeah, not good enough.
Speaking of not good enough, so the Mirror have a report. David Maddock, this was last night, I believe. Marco Silva's Everton fate is sealed, with David Moyes set to return as new manager.
Oh my God, amazing.
So we got to keep an eye on that.
Unbelievable. Now, I wanted to ask you this about Everton. Here are their next 5 matches. This is unbelievable. At Leicester, at Liverpool, home to Chelsea, at Manchester United, and home to Arsenal. Now, I wonder if a run like that means that they're more likely or less likely to make some kind of move. I can't decide because... We talked about before.
What do you mean? Let him manage through this period and then bring someone in?
Yes. Because this is a brutal time to just suddenly get somebody else in there and say, all right, Leicester, Liverpool, Chelsea, United, and Arsenal, go at it. Like, that's asking a lot. Like you just said before, Tottenham playing against West Ham, coming off an international break, it was just the right time to get a new manager in there. It felt like that was a winnable game, get supporters behind them quickly. Like, where's the winnable game here for Everton? This is a brutal stretch.
The winnable games were in the last few months when they had Brighton and they had Sheffield United and they had Norwich and they couldn't do anything. I mean, I don't know what they do. Their options are very limited.
Yeah.
Really very limited. Although Moyes... Back to Everton. There's a lot of fans will not
they
be
say you can never go home again.
I mean, again, that is just sticking plaster over a larger problem.
Get Big Sam back there. That seemed to work for a little bit.
I'm going to give that the silence that all Everton fans want to give that suggestion.
I'm just saying. Couldn't be worse.
I don't know what they do. Really, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they try and get somebody... out of the contract they're already in, a manager who is engaged, i.e. an Eddie Howe, who would be a long-term visioned appointment.
Yeah.
You know, someone with a plan.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, we don't know, but hopefully Mark Ogden does. We're going to talk with him in just a sec about Everton, about Mourinho, about Liverpool, all that and more. Don't go anywhere.
For the people that support us in that moment, it's amazing to reward them. And thank you, and we need to be ready now for the next game Sunday and then to prepare the final Madrid.
I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect, respect.
I have principles that I will keep for the rest of my career and that I cannot change. And one of these principles is I don't like to lose.
Dele Alli. Son! Trashes it through the keeper and has Tottenham and Jose jumping again.
Please don't call me arrogant because what I'm saying is true. I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
Jose Mourinho in Tottenham's succession plan, Pochettino to Mourinho. God, it's been just what a crazy week of news and of press conferences and of storylines. It's been fascinating. And one of the guys who has kind of been on the front edge of this in terms of his support for what Tottenham did, he's been one of the few voices who's really been outspoken on that. It's been Mark Ogden of ESPN FC. We've had him on many times before. We thought this would be a great time to have him back on the show to discuss this and more. Mark, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, Mark, we promise not to shout at you, as Steve Nicol has done, but we might as well get this off to the start that is needed. And I got to ask you, you think this can work, Mourinho at Tottenham. Can you explain to us why?
Yeah, I do. And I think a lot of it is down to the fact that, you know, Pochettino did a great job at Tottenham for 5 years. But I think, as impressive a coach as he is, I think he took Tottenham to a level that they needed to break through, and he couldn't do that. Now, Mourinho, for all of his faults, is a guy that wins. And he, you know, his trophy count is impressive. It's up there with Guardiola, Ancelotti, the very best. I just think that his mentality, his refusal to settle for anything other than the best, will get more out of this Tottenham team. It'll make, you know, it'll make players like Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Son Heung-min, just it'll make them better. It'll make them more determined to go the extra mile. And I think at times under Pochettino, you felt that Tottenham were just happy to be in the top four, happy to be in the Champions League final. You know, there's some things that Pochettino used to say about, well, the domestic cups don't matter. They matter to Mourinho. You know, Mourinho always used to make a case of win the League Cup, win an FA Cup, get a trophy on the table. And that is his mentality. I think Tottenham need a bit of that mentality. They need that kind of first is first, second is nowhere mentality that Mourinho brings. And you know, a lot of his players won't like it, but they're the sort of players that really shouldn't be at a club like Tottenham.
Mark, I think one of the things that has caused the sort of emotional reaction that we've seen from Spurs fans, and I guess even in your experience now, non-Spurs fans and just simply media members, with regards to the Pochettino firing, was the suddenness of it. Now, I've been reading your columns, and like JJ said, you were in favor of this, but I'm just wondering if you believed that this was in fact the right time, or was this a little earlier than you might have thought?
I think it was the right time. You know, I mean, I think I kind of grew up in the Sir Alex Ferguson era, and I covered a lot of Man United during their best days. And the one thing that you kind of it's almost like you develop yourself by covering United so much, that sense of ruthlessness. You saw how the very best operated, and you saw how if people weren't performing, they would go. You know, I remember Ferguson getting rid of Van Nistelrooy and people like Roy Keane. It was ruthless. I think Tottenham have shown that same sort of ruthlessness that ultimately Pochettino, for the last 6 months, had checked out. And I think it wasn't enough for a club of Tottenham's ambitions. They've got this fantastic stadium, they've got a great squad. A squad that I think is underperformed, despite many people think that it's overperformed, but they haven't won anything. And I think the reason why there was such a reaction to Pochettino going is because he was quite a popular character amongst supporters and amongst the media. You know, he was quite a nice guy. He'd always give you a nice, you know, nice line, bit of a smile, bit of recognition. And I think there was almost like this, you know, St. Potts figure emerged that everyone loved him. But, you know, you need to be a bit nasty sometimes to win things. You know, nobody loved Sir Alex Ferguson. Nobody loved Mourinho at Chelsea. And, you know, Pep Guardiola as well takes a little bit of loving because, you know, he's not Mr. Popular with all his players. So I just think Spurs just need that little bit of edge. And Mourinho's the guy to bring the edge. It will make them tougher and harder. And that is, you know, this might sound like a leap of faith, but I think Tottenham are a very good outside bet to win the Champions League this season because you look at the players he's got. He's got two centre-halves that are perfect Mourinho centre-halves. So he's got three, actually, Sanchez, Alderweireld, and Vertonghen. He's got holding midfielders that he likes, people like Eric Dier, Sissoko. He's got a centre-forward in Harry Kane, who is basically another Didier Drogba, Diego Costa, Diego Melito. He's got wingers in Son Heung-min and Lucas Moura that he had, you know, in a sense at Chelsea with Ian Robin and Damien Duff. And in Dele Alli, he has a player who could be, he's Frank Lampard. He could be the guy that scores 15 goals a season and creates another 10. So he's got the building blocks there of a really good team. And he's got an mentality to make them better. So, you know, I'm not an advocate of Mourinho by any means because I had to sit through a lot of his time at United and it was terrible. But I think he's inherited a much better squad at Tottenham. And I think we'll see the fruits of that.
Yeah, can we talk about what he's inherited? Because There's a weird thing that appears to have happened, and I'm wondering what you think about this. So Pochettino, about 2 years ago, wanted to replenish, wanted to move on some of the pros that have been at the club for a few years, like Vertonghen, Alderweireld, and have this replenishing. And Mourinho, as we know, likes to work with older pros and with established players. Could it be the case now that he jumped at this Tottenham job because it's set up for him to succeed in the way that he likes to set a team up?
Absolutely. It's right for Mourinho. And I think that's part of the, as I said before, the reason why the time had come now for the change, because Pochettino is a guy that's very good at identifying young talent and making them better players. But those young players, the Harry Kanes, the Dele Allies, they've become experienced players, and maybe they need a different voice. And one criticism of Pochettino is that he doesn't like working with older players because they're more likely to question his methods. Younger players will basically do whatever they're told. Mm. So Pochettino didn't really want to bring in too many experienced players because they would question his judgment. So Mourinho, as you say, hasn't really got the time to develop young players like Pochettino has. He's all about now. He's all about the here and now. And the one problem I can see for Tottenham down the line is that when Mourinho goes, as he inevitably will, he'll probably leave in the worst position they're in now, because he will fall out with people and he'll sign all the players. But if the winter opens in the meantime, then it might be worth it. So it's an interesting appointment on that score. I think this team is now, this horrible phrase you keep hearing over in the UK, is oven ready for Mourinho. It's ready to go. And I think he could be the key to making them, you know, very, very competitive and win a trophy.
Yeah, Mark, you just mentioned the toxicity there that inevitably comes with Mourinho towards the latter stages of his time at a club. I listened to the press conference there, I'm sure you did, on Thursday or Friday, whenever it was. And
yeah, I was there.
Yeah, what did you make of Mourinho 2.0, the idea that he has maybe reflected? You know, he talked about, I know how to work with people I don't necessarily like now. Do you believe that at 56 years of age, maybe we don't see him flame out in the recriminations and anger like we've done at other clubs? Are you buying that?
No. No. I've seen it all before with Mourinho. The first press conference, the first week in the job, he's great. He's got a suntan. He's been away. He's refreshed. He's full of ideas. He's full of, you know, jokes and smiles. And it is. You can set your watch by it. It's the same every time. But inevitably, a month, 2 months down the line, there'll be clashes. There'll be fallouts. I mean, this month in December already, we've got a game at United, which will be interesting because, you know, you won't want to go to Old Trafford and be beaten, so that'll be quite sparky. And then they play Chelsea in late December, which again, that is a really big game for Tottenham. It's one of the biggest games of the season, so I'd imagine there's going to be some flashpoints in December, and that's when the nasty Mourinho comes out, and the fighting Mourinho. So, but I don't think any manager can change. They ultimately be what they are, and Mourinho is a guy that, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve. I just think he'd be happier at Tottenham than he was at United. I just think the reason it failed at United was because he went there, his dream job at the wrong time. You know, he arrived at United just as Pep Guardiola arrived at Man City, with a team that had been built for Pep for the last 5 years, with money spent all over the place. And I think he realised pretty early at United that he couldn't compete with the guy next door, so he would have to spend the next 3 years being second best in his own city, never mind the country. And he couldn't deal with that. He couldn't deal with being, you know, unable to compete. And at least with Tottenham, I think he can compete in a different way. He can be the King of London again. He can be, you know, he can overtake Frank Lampard at Chelsea, which he'll love, and Arsenal are no threat whatsoever at the moment. So he can be the king of his own domain again, which is what he likes.
Yeah, the last bit I have on this before we move on to some different subjects is, you know, we're talking about the inevitable downfall of how this will end, which seems silly to do right at the start, but that is kind of like the conversation you get into when you're talking about Mourinho, because we've seen it so many times before. And Mark, we glossed over it, but before we mention how Tottenham are, what, a year and a half removed from a transfer window where they did literally nothing. Now, maybe that benefited Mourinho in the short term, because like you said, he's getting a veteran squad. But the thought of Mourinho dealing with that, where a transfer window where he's given nothing. I can't even imagine how that will go. I mean, this, you know, Daniel Levy and Tottenham, they believe in working in their youth system and young players. And Mourinho's a guy who didn't have the patience to watch Kevin De Bruyne or Romelu Lukaku come through. I mean, surely if we're looking at where this downfall will occur and what form it'll take, it will be some sort of Mourinho-Levy rift, will it not?
Absolutely, because there will be frustrations and, I think what Daniel Levy is good at is keeping the best players. You know, very few players leave Tottenham unless the club feel they've served their purpose, but they don't really get many in, and that's what will frustrate Mourinho. But, you know, maybe there's going to be a change in philosophy at Tottenham. Maybe that you know, by hiring Mourinho, you know, if you're smart, and Daniel Levy is smart, that it's a short-term hit. But if in that short-term hit they win the trophies that they're desperate to win, it could be worth the aggravation that comes along with it. And there will be aggravation. But if at the end of 2.5 years Mourinho's won one or two major trophies, then that is a game changer for Tottenham, because they've won two trophies in 20 years. So, you know, sometimes you have to sacrifice your principles. I think Tottenham have done that a little bit. And I think they might be ready to, the next couple of years, say, look, we've got the young players in the team now. Let's go for experienced players that can get us over the line. The key additions to this squad that need to make them winners, and stop them turning up at a Champions League final as though it's a day out and actually going there to win it. You know, Mourinho will bring that, and maybe the players that they need. So perhaps Tottenham might take a different approach.
Mark, what's going on at Everton? Is Marco Silva on the way out? And
well,
go on.
I think the problem that Marco Silva's got is that the fans don't like him, the players aren't performing very well, and yes, there are concerns behind the scenes that he's not the right man. Now, every manager deserves a last chance to salvage his job, but Everton's next two games are Leicester away and Liverpool away. So, I mean, good luck there, because they haven't won at Anfield this century, and Leicester are flying at anywhere this season. So I can only see two defeats then. If they lose those two games, I think Marco Silva, if he survives that long, will be gone. I think he's, for me, he is the manager that's got most to fear. I think Kike Sanchez-Flores at Watford isn't far behind, but I think Marco Silva is the guy that he's probably going to be the next one to go.
And what about the rumours that David Moyes is going to come in on an interim basis?
Yeah, I think those rumours, basically, there's a split in the camp at Everton. So you've got the new owner, Farhad Moshiri, he has advisors that are trying to, you know, push him towards people like Mark Hughes and other coaches, which, again, Everton fans won't be too excited about. But Bill Kenmare, the old chairman, who still retains a place within the boardroom at Everton, he's a big advocate of David Moyes. For me, I don't think Kenmare has the influence he used to have, and I'd be very surprised if David Moyes went back to Everton. But and again, if you're left with a choice of Mark Hughes or David Moyes, I don't suppose you're going to be selling too many season tickets, whoever you appoint. So that kind of shows where Everton are right now, that they're not exactly getting the pick of the world's best coaches, are they?
While we're on the topic of managers on the hot seat, Unai Emery, should he be worried?
Yes. Arsenal are, you know, drifting along. They haven't really shown any signs of being a different team to the Arsene Wenger team. I think they've won a game in the Premier League now. Is it since, I think, early October, Bournemouth? So they've gone five or six games without a win. They're just looking like the same old Arsenal. Great going forward, but they can't defend, and they haven't got anyone in midfield. And Emery's made some strange decisions about Mesut Ozil this season, Granit Xhaka. And I think I've done a column today for FC basically saying that Tottenham's decision to sack Pochettino has actually put more pressure on Emery, because Tottenham have shown that they're not willing to settle for second best with a guy who got into the Champions League final. Are Arsenal prepared to put up with a guy that's letting them drift along? Or are they going to get ruthless as well? So if I was Unai Emery, I'd be quite concerned. And you know, the next three games, Arsenal should really get 9 points, but Norwich away, Brighton at home, West Ham away, Arsenal don't convince you. And if they don't pick up, I think they've got to pick up at least 7 points from those games to keep them safe, because if they lose one of those games, you know, if you lose at Norwich or West Ham, then you're in big trouble.
Mark, someone who is apparently safe is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Now, that was a brilliant game at Bramall Lane yesterday, but it was, for about an hour, maybe 70 minutes, it was looking like, you know, if you're watching that game, you're thinking, this is the end for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But apparently, Ed Woodward believes in this project. So am I right to assume he is safe for the long term? Well, the medium to long term.
Well, he's safer than the other guys we've spoken about, but whether that's, you know, by default or by, I don't know. I mean, I think the problem with Solskjaer is that United are now mid-table. They're celebrating, or well, not celebrating, but they're coming away from Sheffield United with a 3-3 draw, thinking it's a good result, and that shows how far the standards have fallen, you know. That, for me, that the midfield is desperately bad. Pereira and Fred, it's just an indictment of a team of Man United's status that they've got a midfield of those players, and that is on Solskjaer. You know, ultimately, he's the guy who picks the team, picks the tactics, and deals in the transfer market. And for all of Nemanja Matic's faults, he wasn't even in the squad yesterday. And I think, you know, you have to look at Solskjaer's inexperience. And I just don't think he's up to the job. I think he's well out of his depth, but perhaps it suits United at the moment to have a manager that won't cause them the problems that Mourinho caused them, won't make a fuss in the media as Mourinho did. And it's kind of, I think it's quite worrying that a club of United's clout and power have seemingly accepted that they're in a transitional period that might see them miss out on Europe and might see them finish the table. You know, there's so many players in that team. People talk about Anthony Martial, but again, he went missing yesterday. Very, very poor team. And again, you have to question the manager's judgment and, again, question the judgment of those above him who've appointed him and continue to talk about directors of football and technical directors, which you still haven't seen almost a year on. And I do worry for United. I think that they're drifting along like Arsenal.
Mark, last one. Who, if anyone, poses the biggest threat to Liverpool's title hopes?
At the moment, I think Leicester. And I think Leicester have got, they've got a huge game against Liverpool at Leicester on Boxing Day, December 26th. And I think Liverpool are threatening to pull away. But, you know, Leicester have got a very good squad. They've got a manager that's learned to win things in Scotland with Celtic. They know how to win. You know, they've won the Premier League 3 or 4 years ago. So I think they're outsiders, but I think Leicester have got what it takes. They haven't got European football to drain the resources in the new year. I just think Man City at the moment are just looking like a team that, you know, it looks like a mistake there. They've got a lot of injuries. They've got Laporte's injured and Aguero's injured now. I think City have got the best pedigree, but I think they're too far back. I just think that Leicester have a chance, but ultimately I think Liverpool are too far ahead of everybody. I think it's going to be so hard, but Leicester, for me, are the one team that might just stick it out.
Mark, good stuff, man. See, this was a nice conversation. I saw your clip on BBC Radio 5 Live and like, Robbie Savage talking. There were times when I was yelling at my computer, let him talk! So I give you credit. You have the right temperament, I think, to deal with these situations.
Yeah, Stevie Nicol and Robbie Savage. I mean, it was nice.
What have I done to deserve this?
Yeah, exactly. We're a holiday compared to them. Yeah. My God.
Well, good stuff, man. Thanks for taking the time. We'll catch up soon.
Cheers, guys.
Our thanks to Mark Ogden.
I'll tell you.
JJ, he threw in a subtle line there. I don't know if he thought it would quite have the effect on me that it did. I almost couldn't continue when he mentioned that he would look at Tottenham as a dark horse candidate to win the Champions League.
I had to leap to the floor to fan you because you passed out with the joy.
See, these are the moments that bother me, though, because, like, if I had said that, you would have just lost your mind. You would have made fun of me. You would have laughed at me. Oh my God, he's lost his mind over this appointment. He can't even see the world in its clear form.
It's a cup competition. Never forget, Jimmy Traore.
Oh my God, you're such a liar. I can't even look at your lying face as the lying words.
Sorry, I'm not lying. It's a cup competition. That is. Absolutely possible that Tottenham could win the Champions League.
When did we do the podcast? Thursday night or Wednesday night? I forget. Last week. If one of my things that I had said was, I feel terrible. Pochettino's out. I love him. He's done so many good things. However, with this appointment, I now think Tottenham could go on and win the Champions League. You would have laughed. Oh my God, Andrew, he hears the word Jose Mourinho and he can't even contain himself. He doesn't know what he's saying. Mark Ogden is saying this.
Can I proffer something else rather than talk of Champions League wins? I'm really worried about Troy Parrott. This guy was on the edge of the first team. And we know how Mourinho deals with youngsters.
Yeah, we're not going to see him again.
He's going to have to go on loan.
Yeah.
He might be done at Spurs.
Maybe.
I hope not. I mean, he's only 17, 18, so.
Yeah. I mean, he's so young. Look, when this happened, there were obvious players who you would think would benefit, like Lucas Moura, who Mourinho has loved for a long time, wanted him at Real Madrid, I think it was.
Eric Dier.
And Eric Dier.
Alderweireld. Definitely. So, Rose. He wanted to sign all of them at some point.
Yeah. Now, the Eric Dier thing is the one where if Tanguy and Ndombele is healthy, I still think Eric Dier is boxed out of the first team.
Well, I don't know about that.
Don't forget. Eric Dier was poor. He can't make a simple pass. John Obi Mikel was not a bad player. Yeah. He was not a bad
player. He was a functional player within a Mourinho system. All right.
Let's see. You have a mailbag here. Is it a really big one?
It's not. It's a joyous mailbag.
Okay.
at Sio Soccer Pod, at Caught Offside ESPN on Instagram, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Get to Twitter, follow us. Get to Instagram, follow us. Send us emails. Give us your thoughts. Lots of you lovely listeners got in touch looking for us to give props to the Eredivisie for the protest that occurred there over the weekend. As per The Guardian, Ajax and Heracles players stood still for the first minute after kickoff as part of an anti-racism protest across the Netherlands' top two football divisions. The protest came after Excelsior player Ahmed Mendes Moreira was subject to racist abuse by Den Bosch supporters. So that was a nice thing that was done.
Yeah.
Blake Redding with a random question. Blake asks, who would you pick for your lineup right now? Weston McKennie or Harry Winks? What lineup?
Oh my God.
I guess your club lineup?
Well, I guess, I don't know. I took that to mean, who would you rather have on the U.S.? Not that Harry Winks is American or anything even remotely close to
it. He sounds like a gangster from Midtown in the 40s, though.
I think he has Spanish grandparent might be Spanish, so I think he's more Spanish than he is
American.
So I'm
guessing this is for our
just
respect.
Random. This is just like a classic. We're at the bar and we've been drinking, yeah. And we're just like, hey,
who would you rather have?
Weston McKennie or Harry Winks?
And you gotta pick one. Just pick one.
Weston Winks.
I don't know. Pick McKennie because it's quick.
Okay.
And then I'd fall off the bar.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of.
I think I would just go with Winks right now.
I think so too.
But McKennie is probably a better box to box midfielder.
I'll be honest, I don't have any.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm sorry.
Either is good.
This question.
Either is good. Two young players.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Justin. In reaction to the Myles Garrett incident last week, what was the most disgraceful thing you've seen on the soccer pitch, player on player, in your recollection? Zidane's headbutt stands out for me, struggling to think of others at the moment. I've two. One is Cantona attacking a fan. I know it's not player on player. He'd just been given a red card for a tackle. This is the 94-95 season, and he lunged into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter.
This is outrageous. Norman Davies, the Manchester United kit man, trying to pull him away.
It's
unbelievable.
I couldn't get the radio audio, which is just a freak out by Jonathan Pearce. I care not a jot about his tremendous talent. He is a blight on the game. He went nuts, absolutely nuts, but I couldn't find good audio of it. It was the most incredible. What was I, 12? Oh my God. The most amazing thing I've ever seen. My jaw hit the floor on Match of the Day watching it.
I wish I had a more clever response, but I really think that that's it.
I've got one.
Okay.
Lee Bowyer punching Kieran Dyer when they both play together at Newcastle. We got the audio.
Oh, there's a fight going on here between two Newcastle players. Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer are having a fight. Goodness me, what on earth is going on? I have never seen such a thing. Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer suddenly were at each other's throats.
So, oh that was God. Over a misplaced pass.
It's, or no, like a, it's out of Major League 2.
Kieran Dyer got the ball and didn't pass it to Bowyer. Bowyer goes, hey, why didn't you give me that? Dyer told him to F off. And then Bowyer, who had a history, let's put it, of incidents in court. And he ran at him and threw a punch.
Yeah. And then you see Gareth Barry come running in from the opposing team to break it up.
To separate them.
Yeah.
What on earth?
Yeah.
And then Graeme Souness was manager of Newcastle. He dragged both of them out in front of the media to apologise. Like
good.
Naughty school kids.
Yeah.
Wow. Hugo Francisco, 97. Hi, guys. Big fan of the podcast. Been listening to you guys for a couple of years now. I know it's a long shot, but I think that Poch is a perfect candidate to work with a club like Athletic Club de Bilbao. Not big spenders, but they have a great academy, pay well in wages, and have a good mix of first-team players to work with.
That's a two-pronged answer. I think for Bilbao, of course, I think that would be a dream appointment. But for Pochettino, I just don't think, and I'm not saying this to belittle Bilbao in any way, but I just don't think Pochettino is at a phase in his career where he wants to go back to like somewhat of a project. I think he's done that. I think he's shown, he's proven to clubs, big clubs around the world that like, he is a truly great manager. And I just don't know that he wants to go back to a situation where money will be tight. He's going to be asked to carry through, you know, young players and mold a team. That might be what he's best suited for. But I think he's at a phase now where he wants to win trophies. I keep looking at Bayern Munich, and I keep thinking that that, to me, looks like a potential landing spot. Or if you get some sort of, like, managerial reshuffling where maybe if Tuchel wants to go back to Germany and so he leaves PSG to go to Bayern and then Pochettino's club as a player, PSG opens up, I could see that happening. But I just don't know. No offense to Bilbao, but they're not in that top tier of club, and I think Pochettino will want to go to a club like that.
I think if there was restrictions on spending at Spurs and he didn't like it, going to a club where there's restrictions on signing players based on their ethnic background or having to have come through the club, that would be too much of an imposition on a manager. He doesn't want a fixer-upper right now. He wants a big job, I would imagine. Steve in Arizona, remember the time you both randomly checked your iTunes on your phone for whatever songs you were listening to at the time? What would that be today? You want to check?
What a question.
I'll go first.
All right. I gotta get my phone.
Well, I don't use
iTunes. God, that was a long time ago. What a great listener.
I don't use iTunes. I use Spotify now. So I am listening to Ill Wind by Radiohead right now, halfway through the song.
The first one that came up for me was Schism by Tool, which is not necessarily representative of...
I know the pieces fit.
And then
that's a good tune.
When I hit next, it goes to... Oh, this is a good one, actually.
Tonight.
Smashing Pumpkins, yeah.
Yep. From Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
Yep.
And one of the best videos ever.
Yeah.
It's a really cool video.
Yeah.
All right.
So there you go.
Mason wants us to talk about the amazing pillows at Spurs.
Mourinho, he went on and on about the pillows there.
Yeah, he stayed overnight at the training complex, which is supposed to be beyond anything even the NFL can offer. And he said the bed was amazing and the pillows were the softest, nicest pillows, and there was lots of them, and they were big pillows. I can see him spending many nights at the training ground.
Now,
that's the kind of guy he is.
I don't mean to do this, JJ, but I want to go back to the question that we got about Pochettino managing for Bilbao, just so it's clear. They don't have the same restriction over managers as they do players, correct?
Good question.
I'm just looking at their previous managers.
They're all Basque?
No. They had Eduardo Berizzo, who was Argentinian, so.
Oh, so that's not the same restriction, but on players.
But their current manager is.
Okay. Gaisca
Gaetano.
I have a lot of respect for what they do, but, you know, if you're told, well, you can't have this player because he's not from the region.
Right.
That's problematic.
Yeah.
And finally, Shad Larson. Shad asks, just started listening to the podcast this January. Thank you. And you guys keep bringing up JJ's grandfather who served in the military here in the US. For those of us who are semi-new to the pod, do you mind going over JJ's granddad's story? Since we probably missed it when you told it years ago, and how JJ's family is connected to the US. I would love to hear about him and his service to this country. So I never got to meet my grandfather on my dad's side. He died many years before I was born. He actually served, he was drafted in 1917. So he, as a young man, he was in like 19 or 20 when he moved to the United States, and he worked on a farm in Danbury, Connecticut. And he was drafted. I have his draft card. I found his draft card online. So he was drafted to the U.S. military during when the U.S. got involved in World War One, and that would have been the end of 1917. And he was stationed at Camp Upton in Long Island, which is not there anymore. It's in Suffolk County, I believe. And he was about to go to France. And I think whatever happened, they never went. The Armistice Day or a ceasefire was called. The war was over. Because I wouldn't be here. I'm pretty sure if he'd gone there, there's a good chance he wouldn't have made it out. And, that was his service. He had an honorable discharge then. He went back to work, and then his father, my great grandfather, got sick, and he went back to run the farm in Ireland.
Hmm.
Both my grandparents on my dad's side were US citizens, naturalized. They came here in the way back when.
Wow.
So that's it.
Nice. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com, @CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram, and @COSoccerPod on Twitter. A quick what to watch for, JJ. Champions League resumes tomorrow. These are a few of your big games to keep an eye out for. Tuesday, 3 o'clock, Juventus and Atletico Madrid. Juventus are through. Atletico will join them if they win.
That one is just, I mean, Atletico, Ronaldo, it's that whole thing. And Yes, that's such a big game.
Yeah. Also Tuesday at 3, Real Madrid and PSG. PSG are currently through. A win for Madrid would secure their place in the knockout stage.
This slate of games seems absolutely loaded with big games.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the giants are facing off against one another. By the way, Gareth Bale got a not so great reception, from the Real Madrid supporters in the wake of this whole thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure that wasn't helped by Marca absolutely plastering it over the front page of their paper.
Yes, however, this, like, Gareth Bale, then he also came out and, like, kind of fanned the flames a little bit by saying that he is more excited when he plays for Wales. Like, he isn't really saying, normally you would get a player who would go into, whether he feels it or believes it or not, you'd get a player who goes into some kind of damage control and then talks glowingly about his time at Real Madrid and all the great moments he's had. Bale isn't really doing that.
No.
Now, fairness to Zidane, Zidane is telling the supporters to settle down a little bit in the way that they're treating Bale, but, like, who is Zidane to be saying that? Because he's kind of been the one, like, the grand marshal of that parade, the anti-Bale parade for the last several months. So this is so toxic. I can't believe the guy is still at that club. I don't know if he's going to go in January, but he's got to get out of there as soon as possible.
Andrew. It's so, he's so hard. They got to pay him out.
Yeah. Tuesday, 3 o'clock, Tottenham and Olympiacos. For whatever bad press there was for Spurs after the 7-2 loss to Bayern Munich, they are now one win away from securing their place in the knockout stage and having their second game against Bayern be meaningless. So this is, that was a horrible loss, but they took care of business against Red Star. Even though the 2-2 draw against Olympiacos the first time around felt like a bad result, in the end, it appears that they are still on track to get through. But, like I said, they do have to play the games on the field. They're not played on paper. Wednesday at 3 o'clock, Barcelona and Borussia Dortmund. And this is a massive game for Inter, who will be watching this very closely. Inter trail Dortmund by 3 and Barca by 4. Assuming that Inter Milan beat Prague, there's going to be a lot of pressure on whoever loses this game heading into that final game. Especially, can you imagine if Borussia Dortmund win? And then I believe it's Inter and Barcelona on the final group stage game in Inter win and go through, and Barcelona could potentially be on the outside looking in. And if Ernesto Valverde's job was ever in trouble before, my God, I can't even, I mean, that would be it.
Well, so they barely beat Leganés at the weekend, and Dortmund drew in just, they were 3-0 down to Paderborn. They had a second half revival, but it's kind of hard to call this game. Yeah. I mean, it's at the Nou Camp, which.
Well, I would be surprised if Barcelona don't win.
You want to see the Borussia Dortmund fans on our Twitter account and our Instagram. They want Lucien Favre out so badly.
Let's see. Wednesday, 3 o'clock, Liverpool and Napoli. This one, I thought, in the group stage was one of the more interesting fixtures the first time around, because I just remember
it was a good game.
It was a good game, and thinking that the reaction from the Liverpool side was a little bit out of whack. Like, Liverpool losing at Napoli is not an end-of-the-world result, and I felt like in some circles it was being treated that way.
I think because there was mistakes that we hadn't seen before that crept into it. There was a contentious penalty as well against Robertson. That's part of it. But this was a cracking game last season, and I'm expecting... Look, both teams play in a style that I love watching. I can't wait for this.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And it's at Anfield, because all games...
Well, that is where they play all games. And, of course, JJ, one of the great American Thanksgiving traditions, Europa League on Thursday, 10:50 a.m., Estanya and Manchester United. Later in the day, 12:55, Braga and Wolves. And then cap it off at 3 o'clock with Arsenal and Eintracht Frankfurt. Let's see, red cards, man of the match, but... First, JJ, I want to tell you about Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club. When I talk about Dollar Shave Club, I cannot stress enough the quality of the products. They've spent years developing, crafting, refining everything. They have everything I use to look, feel, and even smell my best. You name it, they have it, and I use it. I've been using Dollar Shave Club products. You probably have used it even more than I do, because I see, I still have a beard, but you actually came in today clean shaven.
Oh, well, relatively clean shaven.
Well,
my plan is once a month with Dollar Shave Club, I shave. And it's a glorious experience.
Yeah, it certainly is. And as amazing as their shave stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe. They've got everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and yes, even wipe your butt. And Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on products that you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether it's once a month, a few times a year, whenever. I never have to waste time in a store wandering around and wondering what it is I'm going to get and if it's any good. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know what I'm getting is the highest quality. So here's the deal. Right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything that you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and Post-Shave Do. The best part is you can try it for just $5. And after that, the restock box ships regular-sized products at regular prices. Get your Ultimate Starter Set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/offside. That's dollarshaveclub.com/offside.
I heartily endorse this product.
Let's see now.
Red card.
Do you want to go?
Yeah. Chicago Fire. Or should I say Chicago Fire FC, Andrew? They have completed their rebrand and it has gone down like the Titanic. People hate it. Now, you've seen it, right?
I have, yes.
Yes. What does it look like to you as you look at it right now?
I don't know, some kind of...
It kind of looks like if Real Salt Lake had a third team beyond the Real Monarchs, this is what they'd come up with. First of all, before we get into the mentions on this, which are hilarious, the mentions on Twitter below this rebrand are so funny. I picked a select few of them.
Well, I'm shocked that people on Twitter would be snarky about some sort of corporate rebranding.
It's not great. But listen, maybe this explains it all. This is from their, would you call it hype video or rebranding video?
That one.
A city crowned by the spirit of a people undefeated. We are Chicago Fire FC. This is what we stand for. This is what we've always stood for. Our story, our city, our people. We stand for Chicago.
Yeah. Nobody was buying it. The slick video, you know, people staring into the distance, looking tough with the rebranded material. Here are some of the mentions are the below the, on Twitter, which were pretty funny. Palmetto Palace, worst badge in MLS, and it's not even close. Turpentine, do y'all have any designers in Chicago or nah? Central Jersey Capo, y'all deadass ruined the best crest in the league. Eric Nelson, how did this make it past a focus group, let alone a graphic designer with functioning eyes? Universally hated. It's bad. It's pretty bad.
I'm looking now at all of the crests in the league to see where I would rank theirs among the group.
It's weak is what it is.
I mean, look, I would say looking at them right now... The New York Red Bulls one is hard to love simply because it's just kind of a corporate logo.
Sure, it's not really a crest.
Right, so I almost feel like it's almost not even fair. I don't love the New England Revolution.
Okay. Too patriotic for you,
no, come on, don't be like me. Don't be like... Here's the thing. The new Chicago Fire one, I don't love it. But these rebrands, these never come off great, right? Like,
no.
There's always this segment of the fan base that is not going to like change in that way. So I'm never surprised when the reaction is what it is. Having said that, I don't know that I love what the new logo is. But, like, the way that people freak out over some of these things.
I would love to rebrand you.
Oh, yeah? What would you do? Put some gel in my hair, maybe take me to the gym.
Give you a mohawk, take you to the gym, get you a few tats.
I'm probably ready for some
Coming from the hot streets of Philly, Andrew knew what it meant to be Philadelphia cheesecake. Not cheesecake,
oh
cheesesteak.
Oh, my God.
To his core.
Yeah, I'm going to go to this Irish guy to rebrand a Philadelphian. I mean, look, the Fire are desperate to remind people that they are a Chicago team in that they're moving from the suburbs back into the city. Like, they're trying to restore Chicago pride. Now, the first step in rebranding Chicago pride would maybe be removing the greatest disaster in the city's history from your team name.
I mean, if you're going to spend the money on a rebrand,
go all out. Do that.
But no.
Never quite understood that name more than any other team in sports.
But if you read sports...
With the possible exception of the Miami Hurricanes in college sports.
If you read Sports Illustrated from 2 years ago on how quickly they put everything together, it's not a shock. MLS was thrown together in one season.
But still. Like, that team name is just whatever. Let's see. My red card, JJ. I wanted to give a sad follow-up on a red card that I gave the last time we did red cards in Man of the Match 2 weeks ago regarding Tyzone being red carded for reacting to racist taunts from Dynamo Kiev fans. Instead of the card being overturned in the aftermath, the Shakhtar midfielder was actually banned for a game after he, in the incident, showed his middle finger to the Dynamo fans who had abused him with monkey chants. He also kicked the ball into the stands. Dynamo were fined $20,000 and ordered to play one game behind closed doors. Footballers Union FIFPro said in a statement on Twitter, "We are very disappointed by the decision of the Ukrainian FA to hand Tyson a one-match ban. Sanctioning a victim of racial abuse is beyond comprehension, and it plays into the hands of those who promote this kind of disgraceful behavior." JJ, the punishments to Kiev are simply window dressing. Like, let's be honest, they mean nothing, because if you're going to suspend the player who was a victim of racial abuse, then you do not really care about ridding your league of the actual problem. So, awful, sad follow-up. Sorry that I have to do it, but when I saw it, I thought, yeah, that should probably be mentioned.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
What do you got?
Very simple one. While Phil Jones toiled and fell over a lot at Bramall Lane at the weekend, his former partner was doing things in Serie A, Chris Smalling. Smalling scored a goal and had two assists as Roma moved into the top four of Serie A with a 3-0 win over Brescia. The on-loan Manchester United defender nodded in Lorenzo Pellegrini's corner after 49 minutes and then set up goals for Gianluca Mancini and Edin Dzeko. How about that?
Wow. You got a Manchester connection in Rome.
I'm Chris Smalling. Or Mike Smalling, as what's his name? LVG used to call him. But yeah, well done, Chris. It's nice because he gets ridiculed a lot. On loan, by the way.
There you go. Let's see. My man of the match, JJ, what about the day that Flamengo just had? Gabriel Barbosa scored two goals in the final minutes of the Copa Libertadores final to defeat River Plate 2-1 and give the Brazilian club their first Copa Libertadores title in 38 years. Here's what the two goals sounded like.
Is that close?
It's a goal!
The goal! Equalizer! Gabriel wheels away in celebration, and we have parity in the Libertadores final!
And Gabby...
Goal under the chance! And Flamengo have won the 2019 Copa Libertadores! It's a brace from Gabby goal! From 1-0 down to 2-1 up! In the bleak of a South American eye!
It's all over.
What a game. What a finish, I should say. Had a little bit of a 1999 Champions League final feel between United and Bayern Munich.
What about that stadium in Lima?
What a setting.
It's unbelievable.
At the foot of just like these incredible peaks and mountains, it was, yeah, wow, really unique venue for a cup final of that magnitude.
Yeah.
But quickly, though, that was just the Libertadores final. Then the next day, while they were still celebrating their win in the cup, Palmeiras lost to Grêmio, which clinched the Brazilian league title for Flamengo as well. So what started out as celebrations and a parade for their Copa Libertadores title, it then morphed into celebrating two things at once. Incredibly, it's the first time since Pelé was at Santos in 1963 that a Brazilian club has won both the Libertadores and the league in the same year. What a scene it was. I mean, for those people to be partying in the streets at the open top bus celebration, where, I mean, you can't see like an ounce of pavement. It's just people everywhere going crazy. And like to then find out in the midst of those celebrations, by the way, you've now also just won the league. What an incredible day.
What a double triumph for the club. And also what's interesting as well was this game. People thought, oh, you're only into the Libertadores when it's like the super classical between Boca and River Plate. BBC Two had live coverage of this game in England with Jonathan Wilson on the panel analysing it. So, I mean, this was a big, big game. And they're really trying to push this and make this a rival to, well, maybe not a rival, it's a different time of the year, but make it as big as the Champions League. Give it a bigger audience around the world.
Yeah.
And they are succeeding. Those amazing grounds, those amazing views you see.
Incredible,
you'll tune in just for that alone.
I wonder also what this does for Gabriel Barbosa, who I believe is on loan from Inter.
Yeah.
And he had a great season, most goals in the Brazilian league, also most goals, I think, in the Libertadores. So, like, will he now get his chance in Europe in the wake of this having been a pretty big success for him? So we'll have to wait and see. But, man, just pretty incredible scenes. I do know that I was reading, you know, that there were some at the celebrations – there was some tear gas. Police had to be called in. So things sounded like they did get a little bit out of hand at the end.
To be expected. Yeah, when we talk about the South American game, it's on a different level to what we even experience in the most hostile and hot matches in Europe. It's just different.
But congrats to Flamengo on what turned out to be a truly triumphant day at the end of a truly triumphant season. And this has been a truly triumphant podcast, JJ. We covered lots of ground here today. Champions League week coming up. I do want to also say it is Thanksgiving. I hope wherever you guys are driving to, wherever you're going, drive safe, be safe, have a great time with your friends, your family, whoever you're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving with. We are obviously thankful for all of you because this podcast continues to really be fun to do. And it's because A, I'm here with you and you are a lot of fun to do this with.
Turtleneck or not.
And B, because of you guys that continue to listen, and interact with us. And like, I still think about the Champions League final and that day where, you know, even when Tottenham lost, it was so fun to get to meet so many of you guys. And we are like, truly, I'm not trying to be sappy or corny or anything. We are truly thankful for all of you guys out there who enjoy the show.
You're the absolute best. And, you've really proven it in the last few months. That's all I'll say about that.
Hey, this was a lot of fun, man. Enjoy the Champions League action over the next few days. Enjoy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much. Actually, eat as much as you want, especially with that turtleneck. Looks like it has some give to it.
It's got a lot of stretch.
So yeah, feel free to just go wild. To you, I say,
see you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.